This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 97 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
So for the last couple of weeks, we've started off the show by kind of talking about these weird holidays that have been taking place, these unofficial holidays. Like, there was like International Happiness Day, I think it was last Monday, and then the week before that it was like Nap Day or something. I couldn't really find a holiday that was taking place today, but I do think we should maybe like have a drinking game of like, every time Chris yawns, we need to take a drink. For those who are listening, we did a little bit of a pre-show, and Chris has been yawning nonstop. So if you feel like, if you happen to have a drink with you or anything, feel free to play along because you'll probably be trashed by the time the show is over.
I just yawned again. I'm sorry.
Starting it off strong.
Yeah. So we have a lot to talk about this week. Some very exciting things happened. I know I've been geeked ever since the news started coming out today. Amonkhet news has started slowly trickling out. When I woke up this morning, the first information that I saw was some leaks. It looks like somebody took some pictures and shared them when they weren't supposed to. And it looks like we saw some promos. And the first thing that we saw was a card called Oracle's Vault. I didn't understand what this card did at 8:30 in the morning, and I blamed not being awake enough. And now it's, you know, 9:30 p.m., and I'm caffeinated, and I still don't know what this card does. So if anybody can break it down for me, I'd really appreciate it.
You get to play the top card of your library.
Okay, so it's an artifact. It costs 4 colorless. There's some kind of sphinxness happening on it. So 2 colorless and you tap it, exile the top card of your library. Okay, that I understand. Until the end of your turn, you can play that card and you put a brick counter on it. A brick. Okay. Then you can tap the sphinx, the vault, to exile the top card of your library. Okay, I feel like we just did that, but all right. Until end of turn, you may play that card without paying its mana cost. Okay. And then activate this ability only if there are 3 or more brick counters on the Oracle's Vault. Okay. So you tap it to do, you can play the card, but you still have to pay for it. And you do that 3 times, and then you can do that, but it's free. Mm-hmm. Does that sound about right?
I just want to know why they're bricks. Why bricks?
We have a theme.
Well, our friend Rue Jedid on Twitter, Sonia Greer, she's an actual Egyptologist, and she's been kind of going off on all of these cards and all of these posts from like a flavor perspective, and she actually really likes the idea of bricks, you know, the idea of the Egyptian culture sort of being all about building up, and she thinks bricks are a fabulous idea. So I feel like I have a better understanding of this card, but I just remember looking at it this early in the morning and be like, I'm not awake enough for this card. And so hopefully we've been able to shed some light on it. The other card that was leaked was Archfiend of Ifnir, which is 3 and 2 black. It's a flying demon, 5/4. Cycling 2, which means that Living End has some new creatures, which is fantastic. I know I played Living End for a while, and I was tired of casting just, you know, street wraiths and carabids and spiders. And it's like, give me some demons, give me some flyers, give me some variety. And this has an ability. This is whenever you cycle or discard another card, you can put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponents control, which I really like. I feel like there are times with Living End where you have cast Living End, you have a board full of things, and then you're kind of like, well, do I hard cast these fatties in my hand, or should I cycle them? And so this kind of gives you some instant value. And so I really, really love this card, and I think it's definitely going to be an auto include in Living End. There was another card that was foiled called Glorybringer, which is a dragon. People love dragons. And it had a neat little ability called Exert, which we'll get to in a little bit. But so this is what I saw first. I saw some very unofficial leaks that came out. And then Wizards came out with an official post that kind of went over what we can look forward to. So the article posted today starts off with punch cards, which I think is really cute. I know we've talked in the show about how sometimes it annoys us when people don't bring tokens and dice and things like that. And Wizards is doing that. They're giving you a little punch card where you can punch out your own brick tokens and you can, your counters and your own -1/-1 counters. So we literally have no excuse now. Thank you so much, Wizards. And they also mention there's some neat abilities on here called Embalmed and Exerted. And Exerted appears to be tapping something and it doesn't untap as normal. Am I getting that right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you make the decision whether to exert a creature as you declare it as an attacker. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you choose to have it exert, an ability will trigger and grant you a bonus. As a trade-off, the creature won't untap during your next turn. It's tired, needs a nap, attack more later. I love this official terminology, Blake. It's very professional. So exert is a thing, and it looks like the punch card will give you a little thing that you can put on your exerted creature so that you know that they're tired. Embalmed is the thing that really made me stand up and take notice. So it's an activated ability that you can activate if a creature card has embalm on it and it's in your graveyard. And the thing that's most important about this is you're not actually casting the card from the graveyard. So if you're activating the ability from the graveyard, you can't counter it, at least with a normal counter. If you have something like disallow, you can, as my friend Ian so rudely pointed out to me, you can do that. And so the original creature spell can be countered, but the ability cannot. And I love this. Like, I was reading about this, and then the embalm ability creates a token. And so there was an example given of Trueheart Duelist, which is a 2/2 white creature. And then she comes back as a lady mummy zombie.
Sweet.
I was like, yes. And one of my friends on Twitter was like, she's so powerful, she don't need no right hand, because she doesn't have a right hand. But the minute I looked at this, I immediately tweeted Christine Sprankle, and I was like, you need to start investing in Ace Bandages, like, right now. This needs to happen. And she's like, I'm in. So I'm completely here for Mummy Lady Zombies. I think this is really cool. And also, notably, this embalm thing gets around things like Grafdigger's Cage and Containment Priest. So if you're somebody like me who hates graveyard hate, embalm gets around all of that, which is amazing. So I'm really, really excited about embalm. And of course, the punch card gives you a little thing that you can put on your embalmed creature to show that that's happening. We also got a peek at the game day playmat, a new event that they're trying called Magic Open House, the welcome decks, of course. And there's just so much to take in here. What did you guys like about all of this? Like, are you excited?
Yes. I really want to play with the Trueheart Duelist so far. Like, that looks like an awesome card. People are happy Fling is back, so that's a thing. and I just want to see what else they're going to spoil. Really, there was only two cards that really stood out to me so far, which was the Trueheart Duelist and Sixth Sense. Looks pretty cool. But I just want to see what else they're going to give us. This is only merely a taste, and I really want to see what the rest of it offers. And I think that some of the stuff that they're going to be doing for pre-release and for other ways to promote people to get into your store within pre-release weekend and release weekend, I think is pretty awesome. Because one of the things they're going to do, I guess, is if you bring someone to play Magic that hasn't played there before, or they're new to it or whatever, they're going to give you like little D4 that has -1/-1 counters so you can mark it on your creatures. So I'm just going to drag someone from work in there and be like, I want my -1/-1 D4 and I need it now, which is good because I actually have a friend from work that I'm going to be teaching how to play. So that is pretty awesome. So I'm excited for Amonkhet. I want to know more about the story and looking forward to seeing more cards, including the, what are the inventions called again?
They have a really, invocations, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to see that too. And also, if you're not going to use your punch card, if you punch it out, clean up your mess. That's the other thing I'm going to say.
You know, Chris, your idea to bring somebody for the dice is all well and good until the person decides that they want their dice. And then I can just imagine Chris, like, doing, like, pulling their arm. Give it. No, it's mine.
Can we each have one, please?
You've created a monster. And then we have to start a GoFundMe to bail you out of jail because you beat up the person you taught to get their dice. Like,
it was all in good fun.
I just wanted to teach someone to play.
You went from open house to, do they call jail the big house? Yes. Is that what that is? Mm-hmm. You went from open house to the big house. Hallie and Katie, you excited about Amonkhet?
Very. Yeah, I really like this set so far. I mean, we've only seen a handful of cards at this point, but so far, it looks like there's an uncommon 4/4 flyer that enters the battlefield and returns a creature to its owner's hand. Hello. So, yeah, I mean, I'll take any variation on Manowar and Mistraven I can get. So this card looks really sweet. Seriously, though, I like this set a lot from what we've seen so far. It seems like these two keyworded abilities are a little complicated, but it seems like they give players a lot of flexibility. Like the exert ability is going to require people to make a lot of complicated decisions. And I really like that. I like mechanics that push players to make difficult decisions. So I'm really high on this set so far.
Yeah, this set is like dripping in lore and flavor. It's awesome. I really like the punch cards because I really like when they introduce new or complex things, and then they actually like give you the tools to do it. Because I actually did not think that Magic would ever bring back -1/-1 counters. Just like in the back of my mind, I was like, they won't go back that way because it was so difficult to tell between the two to begin with, or like different kinds of counters. So I like that they're giving you the punch card for all of your counters and embalmed. And the creatures coming back as white creatures once they get embalmed because they're mummies. It's just everything. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I really also like exert, like Hallie said, forcing you to make decisions, because the decisions that you're going to be making at pre-release are not so complex that a new player can't get them, but I think it puts another level of depth for experienced players who are also trying to enjoy the pre-release to have a little bit more decision making than just throwing guys at their opponents and hoping that, you know, an attack gets through. And What did you guys think about the playmat? I can't decide exactly how I feel about the game day playmat.
I mean, it's okay. It's I expected more. Well, I mean, if I had to really dig into it, it seems like whatever weapon is being pointed at old boy looks like one of the weapons from the gods or the people that we suspect are the gods. And so if I had to guess, I would say that this person is challenging a god, or the god is like noticing this person. And so, you know, I can kind of see it. But again, that's something that I am sort of a sponge and I'm just constantly looking at information, I think it's very easy for me to look at this and piece it together, but I don't know that like the average player who doesn't really keep up with everything would really know what's going on. They're like, all right, well, he's in pain or he's about to be in pain. And, that's all I can really take away from it. I do like the addition of the word worthy. Mm-hmm. I seem to recall these just saying champion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now they say worthy champion. So I'm all for like titles and shit. So. So I'm fine with that.
I really like also a lot of the art in this set so far. It all seems really well connected and like it flows, even though there's a bunch of different artists working on it. I especially like the new art for Mighty Leap. It pictures like a woman leaping off a very, very, very small spire, and she has these two badass swords in her hands, and she looks like she's gonna like Spider-Man all up on some bitches. So I am all for that. I also like the gigantic beetle, but that's just me.
Yeah, when I look at the Dune beetle, I immediately think of the Mummy movies and like the little scarabs where like burrow their way into you, and I'm like, oh my god. It's like there's a lot of people that are really excited about Fling because we have that sort of ATOG ish card in Standard right now, and there are some people that just want to live the dream and fling an ATOG at someone, and I can kind of see where they're coming from, but I do think this set is dripping with flavor so far. We have zombie jackals, which is very much Anubis like you know, tattered mummy is a thing. The fact that we even have cards called mummies is so fantastic. There's a card called Graceful Cat, and they also mention in the flavor text for Graceful Cat, they imply that one of the gods is going to be named Oketra, which is probably the lady with the gold cat mask. So we know who she is. We have a name for one of the gods. Sixth Sense is just beautiful. Like you have like the Cleopatra hair, the eye makeup. I mean, you're unmistakably in an Egyptian themed realm, which I think is really great. And you know, I think everything we've seen, Cursed Minotaur, A.E. Marling
things that he worked on, just seeing this really frail, withered Minotaur is just awesome. And, I'm just so excited for this set in a way that I wasn't for, Kaladesh. And so I'm really, really looking forward to this. And if I may, I have a preview card, myself. Me personally, not Magic Mike's or not anything else. Blake Rasmussen emailed me today. Well, first Trick emailed me, or first Trick pinged me. And anytime Trick pings me, I immediately wonder what I did wrong. So Trick sends me an IM and he goes, Aaron. And I'm like, Patrick. And he goes, can I have your email address? And I'm like, oh shit, what did I do now? I was like, I don't have anything, Patrick. Like, whatever you're going to sue me for, I have nothing. And he's like, why do you always say I'm trying to sue you? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just, it's me. I know what I'm capable of. What did I do? And he goes, nothing. He's like, what's your email address? So then he goes, be on the lookout for an email from Blake. And Blake goes, hey, we got a card for you. And so on April 4th, I will be spoiling it on my Twitter feed. So keep an eye out for that. It's really, really cute. It may not be like the bestest, ultimatest, rarest, most powerful card, but it's hella cute. And it has some subtle cues of mine that I think people will relate to. And so it's very adorable. And so definitely come check out my feed for that.
Sweet.
So, yeah. So Almanket isn't quite here yet, and we still have Modern Masters 2017 to chew on. And Chris, you got another opportunity to draft the set the other day. How did that go?
It was really fun. I went into it not wanting to be very serious and just wanting to have fun being able to draft and like play with some cards that I've enjoyed in the time that I've been playing Magic, and hopefully some cards that I haven't played with before. So I was just very excited about being invited to go and draft. My friend Paul was the one that set it up, so we were able to draft with some people from the shop. And then also Ben and Christina were in on it, and so that was nice. And so it was a good group to draft with. I decided to go a route to do like a green-white tokens type of situation, which is not something I would normally do. So I was like, okay, this is fine. So I grabbed probably maybe more than I should have, but I grabbed a lot of giant baiting. And I was like, I need all of these.
What?
Yes. Because I wanted to be able to make those big 4/4 giant tokens, because it's like, ooh, this has haste. And if I can conspire, then I can copy it and have another 4/4. The conspire was kind of hard to turn on, but giant baiting was at least fun to play with. I also had a lingering souls that got passed to me, so I was like, well, I can't not play this card. I mean, this is a thing that needs to happen. I had a sensor splicer that I was able to play out, and that gives your golem creatures, you control vigilance, and you can create a 3/3 golem. So I had that in addition to, oh, what is it? The green card that makes golems. Oh, the Vital Splicer. So I had like all these golems like at all time. I'm like, damn it, why didn't I just go a golem route? This would have been, you know, amazing. But I didn't see any Master Splicers or anything like that. So it was fun to be able to play. And I had an intangible virtue. So all my tokens got +1/+1. And that was really wonderful. Most of the games that I played, I lost out of 3, so it's not like I was just completely getting taken. There was a seance that got passed around that nobody like wanted, like for any reason. And it was odd to see fetch lands just be like, nah, we don't need this, we don't want this, because this is a draft. So it's like, okay. And never would you ever see that happen like in any other scenario. We did a rare redraft at the end, so I ended up getting a couple things out of there that were either good value or cards that I wanted more copies of, like Arresto Angel. I think I only had a few of those or something. So I was like, yep, I'll take Arresto Angel. And the new Is It Charm art was really nice, so I grabbed one of those. I put the compulsive research I got into my commander deck, which was cool. And I was surprised that nobody was taking, what is it? The one blue card that's good in commander. Dead Eye Navigator. Like, nobody was taking that. I'm like, really? This is a commander staple.
How? Even I know to take it.
Yeah. It was just like at the end there. And I'm like, why is no one taking this? And I was just very confused. I'm like, I'll take it. I have a foil one, but I'll take it. I'll give it a good home. And it was just nice to be able to kind of get a feel for what kind of like archetype I wanted to do. Christina, she ended up doing like a blue white blink thing. It was good. Like, I really wish I could have played those colors just to do it, because it seemed like it was a lot of fun. So I'm hoping in a couple of weeks, we're going to draft again. And I'm hoping to try to do like a different archetype, see if there's something else I'd like to do. I forgot that like on Earth was a thing. So I was getting kind of like screwed with that. And I was like, oh yeah, this is a thing that people do. I've just never played these cards before. So it was just nice to see how the cards interact with each other. I don't know if I had more fun drafting Modern Masters 2017 than I have like doing Kaladesh or Aether Revolt, but it definitely was a fun experience, and to be able to play with cards that I guess I would never have like paired them together before, just to try a different archetype. So all in all, it was a good time. I hope to do it again soon, and I'm hoping to get my own Modern Masters box and maybe draft it or open it at some point. But that's a lot of money, so we'll see how she goes.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, people are still tweeting about their experiences, and it seems like for the, you know, universally, people really, really love the set. I think the closest thing I saw to maybe a complaint was somebody saying that they were happy that there wasn't a Modern Masters 2017 GP, because I guess they were saying that, like, you know, unless you're playing like 3 or 4 color control, it's just so, that archetype's so much better than everything else, and that there's just such a gap there in terms of, you know, how competitive certain archetypes are. And they were just saying they were really happy that it wasn't a GP because they were just afraid of how swingy it might be, or how, you know, it might be really difficult for other archetypes to keep up.
I can see that.
Yeah. So, Hallie, you said that you've been teaching people around you how to draft. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how's that been going? And what's your method? Because I need to sign up for that class, clearly.
So it's been going pretty well. The first teaching draft that I had, I've done two of them recently. The first one I did was with some of my coworkers at Card Kingdom, because there were a decent number of people who said, you know, they play Commander or they play Standard, but they don't draft a whole lot and they just wanted to get better at drafting. So we basically had a learn to draft. And I was allowed to, you know, pick the format and basically run it, which was really cool. So I suggested that we draft Magic Origins, because one thing that I always loved about core sets was how simple and how on rails they are. There are no really complicated mechanics that you have to worry about. It's just sort of like, you know, there are a lot of vanilla creatures, so that really helps with learning how to evaluate cards, just sort of seeing really basic creatures and really basic spells. There were a couple of people who asked me questions about like what spell mastery does, but otherwise, like, it was really simple. And I had exactly 8 people, and the way I structured it was I had all of us sit around a table, and I alternated. So the way it worked was we had 4 people who had never drafted before and 4 people who knew how to draft and were like, you know, intermediate to advanced drafters. So I had the 4 people all sit with one of the experienced drafters on either side of them. So that way, you know, we made it pretty clear that, like, you know, this is for everyone to learn. This isn't, you know, a cutthroat Magic tournament or anything. It's just, you know, we're here to teach people. And so I basically told all the learners, like, hey, if you have a question about a card in your pack, turn to one of the people on either side of you and just ask them a question if you're unsure about, you know, what a certain card does or what a certain ability means. And it went really well. Everyone, you know, we didn't really have a lot of, you know, holdups or like people mixing up packs or anything. Like, it was really clean. It was really smooth. So, you know, I just kind of explained how to draft. I gave everyone like a little handout with like the basics of drafting and like, you know, what you should look for in your packs. And it went really well. I think the only thing that was a little unusual was that a couple of the people who were learning immediately went and drafted monocolored decks, because they were like, oh, I first picked a green card, and look at all these other green cards. I'm just going to keep taking green and ignore everything else. So
that's my style.
Yeah. So I was getting like kind of mixed signals, because it was like, oh, the person on this side of me is just taking green and the person on the other side is just taking blue. And it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. So it was a little unusual for a draft, but, you know, that's to be expected. And I played against, basically what I did for the first round was that I had all the inexperienced drafters play against an experienced drafter who wasn't sitting next to them. So, like, one of the people who was, like, three seats away from them. And the reason I did that was because a lot of the time when you have a new player playing against a new player, it's just sort of like the blind leading the blind. Like, you know, if one of you has a rules question and the other isn't able to answer it, then, like, you don't know what to do. And sometimes instead of asking, you just kind of make something up and go with it. And I just wanted to avoid that because I've seen that happen at the Lady Planeswalker Society a lot. So I was just kind of like, okay, you know, you're going to play against someone who knows what they're doing and can answer your questions. And I encouraged everyone, like, if you have a question, ask your opponent. Like, they're not here to smash your face. They're here to help you learn. So it went really well. One of our newer drafters actually drafted a really good deck because even though he'd never drafted before, he had played Commander almost exclusively. He had a really good sense of how to evaluate cards just right off the bat, just from the few tips that I'd given him. And he drafted a really, really good, like, aggressive black-red deck where he had, like, so Goblin Piledriver is in Magic Origins, which a lot of people forget about. It was reprinted in that set. And Dragon Fodder was also in that set. So, you know, if you're able to go, you know, turn two Goblin Piledriver and then, like, make some goblin tokens, and then there are, like, a bunch of other decent playable creatures that are, like, randomly goblins. Like, there's a 1/1 goblin with Renown, which is the ability that puts a counter on a creature after it deals damage to a player. And, you know, if it's Renown, it gets Menace. That's a goblin. Or, like, there's a 3/2 goblin with Menace for 3, which is totally playable. So it's, his deck was really, really good. And he actually, like, legitimately beat me in one of our games. So that was pretty cool. So we had that draft and people were really excited and they were just like, yeah, like, drafting 101 was super fun. Sign me up for drafting 102. So yeah, I'm, you know, planning. I actually sent out, like, a company email today. I was like, hey guys, you know, if you want to continue learning how to draft, or if anyone else wants to get better at drafting, like, we should draft sometime. So there should be more of that in the future. And then over the weekend, Barb, one of our friends, was having a draft. She had initially invited me, and then I wasn't sure if I could make it, but then at the last minute my plans changed and I could. And I was like, hey Barb, you know, do you still have room in your draft? And she was like, well, you know, I have 8 people, but a lot of them have never drafted before. So if you'd like to come along and help teach them, you're more than welcome. So I ended up teaching some people how to draft with Modern Masters 2017, which was a little complicated because I was basically sitting next to this woman. I think she was the wife of one of Barb's doctoral students. Barb is a psychology professor. And I was sitting with her because she had played Magic, like, maybe once or twice before, but she didn't have a great idea of how to evaluate cards, and she felt more comfortable, like, having someone to talk to while she was drafting. So, of course, I had to sort of develop, like, a secret code with her where I could, like, say things and imply things without, like, giving away what card she was taking, where I would be like, well, you know, I would, like, point to her card and be like, well, you have, like, a bunch of cards already that cost this much, so you probably shouldn't take this card. You should probably take this one instead. Or, like, oh, you have a non-basic land that makes that color, so maybe you can take this, or that kind of thing. The only frustrating thing about, using, Modern Masters 2017 to teach players is that there are so many non-basic lands in that set, and there's such an emphasis on, you know, being able to splash a third or sometimes fourth or fifth color. So when, you know, when I was teaching people with Magic Origins, like, one of the reasons I picked that set was because it's so on rails that, like, the two color archetypes are very well defined, and if you just pick a two color archetype, you end up just, like, finding, like, naturally picking cards that build a cohesive deck, whereas the archetypes in Modern Masters are just so fluid, and it's so easy to splash things, and, you know, trying to figure out, like, whether to take a card for your deck or to take mana fixing is such an advanced skill. Like, that's something that I don't even feel like I fully mastered. Oh, and yeah. So, teaching that to a new person is really not ideal. So, in that regard, you know, PSA, if you're going to be teaching your friends how to draft Magic, don't teach them with Modern Masters. It's just a little too complicated. But, people still had a really good time, and I think they all told me that they felt like they leveled up a little bit, so that was still really good.
That's good. That's good. And, you know, I couldn't help but notice you said you sent a company email. Mm-hmm. How are things going with the new job, Miss Community Manager, is it?
Yeah, things are going really well. There are a lot of awesome projects in the works, and I'm really excited.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I'm so, like, I still, you know, we talked about it on the show. I'm still obsessively, like, looking at tweets. And we did Allie send this tweet? Did Allie send this post? Is I just want to know, like, what you're behind. I want to peek, like, behind the curtain and know which ones you've done. And
I did make some tweets about battle decks this week. Okay. That was really cool. We put out two new battle decks, and people really loved. We put out one called Cruise Control, but Cruise is spelled, like, C-R-E-W-S. Because it's basically it's a deck that has, it has vehicles. So crewing, and all the creatures in the deck are, maybe not all the creatures, but many of the creatures in the deck have the inspired ability, which are the creatures from, I think it was Journey into Nyx, where like when they become untapped, something cool happens.
Yeah.
CVM was actually behind that, I believe. He designs a lot of our battle decks, and so he apparently found that interaction, was like, oh, what if I build a deck that does this? So it was really cool. People really liked the idea of the deck, and they also really liked the name, so it was just a really big hit.
I have to ask, what's a battle deck?
Oh, okay, so a battle deck. Battle decks are basically these 60-card beginner-friendly decks, and a lot of them, I mean, they're kind of similar to intro packs in that they're supposed to be cards that are built around like a set mechanic, like the crew mechanic or the inspired mechanic, or, you know, creatures, like the other one we put out recently is just like creatures that care about artifacts, but it's a 60-card deck that is usually built around a certain keyword, and it's really simple. They're mostly, you know, commons and uncommons, like pretty uncomplicated cards, and they're meant to, you know, give new and returning players a deck to play. I think most of them are Modern legal, I believe all of them are Modern legal, but they're just sort of casual decks that you can play with your friends, or like I've used them to teach people how to play Magic. Like I had a coworker who again had only played Commander. We have a lot of Commander players at Card Kingdom. And he had only played Commander, and he had never played Magic one-on-one. So I was like, oh, why don't we just take two battle decks and I'll, like, teach you how to play Magic one-on-one. And so we played that way, and it was really good. It was just, like, really easy to teach him. So, yeah, the professor from Tolarian Community College, who's an affiliate of Card Kingdom, had made a video, I think it was over the holiday season, where he reviewed the battle decks, and he gave them a really good review. He said that he thought they were really great for new and returning players. So, you know, you could always check that out if you want to learn more about them.
Very cool. Thank you for clearing that up.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of EDH, Chris, you and I got the opportunity to once again play with our new EDH group. We actually have an EDH group. How cool is that?
Very cool. I'm very excited. I've retooled my deck a little bit, but I think I want to change some things that I want to start ramping into more mana. So I'm thinking I might just change it to just a blue, like, control deck and try to just high tide with Blue Sun Zenith all the live long day, just cause it'd be fun. But my commander right now is still Mizzix, and I have plenty of counter spells in there. I can't promise they show up all the time, but they are definitely there. I've been enjoying playing, like, this past Sunday, it was just four of us. The first time that we did it, there was five, and we were able to play two games. I will say this much, one of the people in our play group loves his planeswalkers. So many planeswalkers all the time. And I'm not like really a person that runs a lot of planeswalkers. So I was just like, wow, this is getting out of hand like super fast. When you have Tamio with an emblem, and you have Venser the Sojourner and all this stuff. And it's like, what is going on here? But I felt that the second game we played was a little more in balance. It was kind of funny to see Christina nuke all the non-basic lands, which was none of us. It was only our one friend. So I was like, oh, no. But it shut things down. And I think a good sign of a group that can play Commander well together is not to have one person that's going to take over the board completely, where power is consistently shifting. Like, there are times they're like, okay, Aaron is the big threat now. We need to do something about Aaron. Or Christina is the big dog. Like, we need to do something here. Like, kind of assess your threats and realize that it's constantly changing. And so I kind of like that. I'm happy that we don't play with people that are just like, here's a smokestacks or here's an infant combo on whatever turn and like, we're done. Because the whole point of wanting to do it is a social thing, and it's fun, and we don't get to do it all so often. And, you know, EDH is fun to play when you have people with different play styles and different deck types. So I've been having a good time playing. I definitely want to work on my deck some more to change a couple things around. Aaron brought a different commander deck, which she'll have to tell you about because it was really fun. But I'm looking forward to hopefully doing it again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we've been really enjoying ourselves, you know, and I think that, you know, we found a group that kind of looks at Commander the same way that we do. Like, Christina's a pretty competitive person when she's, you know, at tournaments and things like that, but she seems to know how to kind of let her hair down, and, you know, she's still, like, a focused player. Like, it's not like she's, you know, I think people tend to assume that if you go casual, you just sort of give up your skill. You know what I mean? Like, we're not completely like just making misplays and, you know, egregious punts or things like that. Like, we're still playing to the best of our abilities, but, you know, there's just something different in the vibe of the game. And so, you know, it was just the four of us this time. Our friend Jake was not there this week, but, you know, four is still more than enough to do a commander pod. And, I took, Omnath this week. I used to have an Omnath Locus of Mana deck that I lost a couple of years ago. And then I recently got the inspiration to rebuild it again. And, it's very different than my normal deck. It's basically just a bunch of green fatties with like a lot of basic forests. So I don't have a lot of answers to things. You know, I think I'm kind of taking the green approach of just, you know, make creatures and really big creatures and just sort of win that way. Just really scary, like tramplers and, you know, big things like, you know, I have a Multani Morrow Sorcerer, you know, rocks, you know, things like that. And then Omnath eventually gets really, really big, and it's just a really good time. And so, we had a lot of fun. I actually had to kill somebody with Soul Conduit. That felt really, really good. I had Omnath at like 19-19, and Chris was sitting at like, what, 20-21?
Something like that.
And so I ended up swinging to Chris, and I knew that I was going to leave them at one. And I wanted that. Like, I wanted to know that, like, I wasn't going to keep Chris at one. I was like, this is temporary, but I'm going to have to take you to one. And Chris was like, I understand. And so I swing in. Chris has no blocks, and so they're sitting at one. Our friend Christina, her commander's Rurik Thar, who's a lot of fun. If you're not familiar from the Return to Ravnica block, it's a good time. And also noteworthy, Rurik Thar can block flying creatures. I learned that the hard way. I thought I was hot shit, and I went to give my like 50-50 Omnath flying. And I was like, oh yeah, girl, you're going to get it. And she's like, block with Rurik Thar? And I was like, it can block? It can block flyers? Like, why is a two-headed giant able to block flyers? Like, this is ludicrous. And so it's very relevant that he can block flyers. So Chris is sitting at one. Christina has Rurik Thar. Our friend with the planeswalkers decides to Miracle Terminus. And I was like, that's not very nice. And I'm like, wait a minute. Miracle Terminus? Rurik Thar trigger? And I'm like, oh, switch life totals.
Oh, gosh.
And so he's at like 43, and he's like, whoop, he's at one. Miracles happens. We go and lose all of our shit. He takes six from the Rurik Thar, and he's dead. And I was like, I couldn't help it. I'm so sorry. Like, that wasn't even part of the plan. It was just like, I knew that I wanted to Soul Conduit at some point. It just, like, the moment happened, the opportunity happened, and I was like, oh, fuck, we got to do this. And so it was just too cool not to. And I was like, I'm really sorry, but I really want to kill you with the Rurik Thar. And so he was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just get a bottle of water and watch you guys play. And so I was like, I'm really sorry, but I'm not that old. It was so much fun. And so eventually Christina came from behind and beat us with her Naya ramp deck. And I think the other sweet part of the game was Chris keeping Ulamog at bay with mind games. Just buyback mind games over and over and over again. And so, like I said, I really, really enjoy playing with our group. I think we're playing just about once every 2 weeks now, it seems to be. And, I know there's been talk of maybe inviting some more people, possibly expanding the group and maybe playing at like a store or something. But I really like where this is going. I've even found myself, becoming that person, like when spoiler season comes around, like there's always that one person that's like the first person to comment and they're like, this would be great in my Vela Nighthawk deck. And it's like, who asked you? And like, Magic Mike's got its spoiler card and Evan was showing it to us. And the first thing out of my mouth was like, this would be great in my Omnath EDH deck. And I was like, when did I become that person? Like, when did I become the person to like, forget modern, forget standard, forget competitiveness. Just look at it like, oh, this would be great in my EDH deck. I'll put a combo with this in my EDH deck. I'm like, I'm officially that girl. I'm like, oh my God, how did this happen? And, so I'm having a lot more fun playing EDH than I thought. And I'm definitely on the hunt for like other budget decks. So if anybody knows something that you think might be up my alley and it's like less than $50, definitely hit me up because I'm more inspired than ever to keep playing EDH. Mm-hmm. So last but not least, our friend Emma Handy wrote a lovely post over at Star City Games called Facts of the Grind. And she basically keeps it real and talks about what it's like being a Magic the Gathering pro or what it's like for her. And I think these posts are fascinating. You know, I feel like we just don't get to see, you know, going back to kind of pulling the curtain, going behind the curtain, you know, we really don't get to see how these people do what they do. You know, they make it seem so effortless. You know, they go from city to city, racking up, you know, 11 and fours and just sort of living this life, and you see stories of the credit card game, and Gabby Sparks, you know, bombs Orlando, but it's okay. She's at a sweet hotel, and it's just like, how do you people do this? And so, so Emma tries to give us a little bit of a peek into her world, and she kind of talks about what her grind has been like, and she talks about travel time and how much time she actually spends by herself, and how she finds sort of those long car rides alone to events very, very, you know, enriching, and there's soul searching happening. And then she talks about kind of the differences in skill level and how when you're playing so much Magic, you start to kind of take your losses a little better and just sort of get better at identifying what it is that you can control. She also talks about the cost of grinding and how she spends her money and how, you know, a lot of times you see some people who may not do very well and then you see them selling their cards to pay bills, you know, at the next event or whatever. And she kind of hit on some really nice points, and I thought it might be fun to kind of talk about what our grinds either are like right now if we're playing competitively or what our grinds were like, and how they kind of relate to Emma's. So who'd like to go first?
I really liked this article. She says in the beginning that she wanted to write about something that people don't typically write about. And I think the grind, especially at a below pro level, but an above FNM level, I don't think is addressed very often. And I did a grind for about 9 months, where I was traveling 3 weekends a month or more. And man, it's hard. It's like, it's really difficult, but really enjoyable if you're into the game, which I was at that time. And there's a lot of privilege that some Magic players have. And this is, you know, outside of social progressiveness. But when I hear somebody who's like, oh, I didn't want to drive the hour to the GP. I'm just like, you're insane. You should know what you have. I'm so jealous of you. Because travel time totally adds up, especially if you don't live in a metropolis city where plane flights are very inexpensive to, you know, you can hop on a plane for $100 somewhere else. No, plane flights, you know, from all the places I lived while being a grinder have been, I mean, sometimes you can score a deal of $150, but a lot of them are $400 to $500, or you drive for 12 to 15 hours, and that's just kind of how it is to go to a big event. So I've definitely put a lot of miles on my car, a lot of wear and tear, especially when you take into mind, I was usually the driver for our group of grinders, and, you know, getting tires replaced and oil changed more frequently than you usually do. All of that stuff adds up to more than just what you see on your credit card bill at the end of one tournament. And grinding, it can definitely be expensive. Emma talks about how she had somebody to borrow a lot of cards from. I was also fortunate to be in that position because it took a lot of the cost away. But if you're kind of doing the grind thing on your own, it's a difficult thing to keep going with, and have a sustainable lifestyle while doing it. Especially when you talk about if you're taking Friday off work to travel to your event and maybe Monday off to come back, if it's a GP and you want a day two, or if you're going to be driving overnight Sunday and then going to work Monday morning, looking like that person that just got off a grind. or I don't know. It's a really tough lifestyle, but very enjoyable at the same time, if that's what you were wanting to do with your life at that point in your life. I really like how she talked about differences in skill level, because I think one of the most important things I got out of my grinder lifestyle was playing against people who I didn't normally play against. When you have your local FNM, your local PPTQ circuit, I think it's easy to adjust your skill level to the people around you when you kind of know what decks they might play or know what their skill level might be just by, like, you've seen them around or you know how they typically finish in a tournament. But when you get out of that and you're actually grinding and you're trying to go to RPTQs and go to Opens and GPs, being able to play against people better than you is often the best way to improve. So I think that was probably the most valuable thing I got out of grinding tournaments, was being able to improve because I wasn't just playing with my normal play group. And I like how she brings up variance, because you have to accept Magic's variance if you're going to stick around with Magic, because you can do everything right and still lose. Your opponent can do everything wrong and still beat you. And it's an important thing to let roll off your shoulders, because you're going to burn out much quicker on your grind if you can't accept that Magic is a game of variance. You should pick up chess. So I really loved this article. I think it shines a light on something that a lot of people don't look into very much, or just sometimes reading about somebody who can commiserate with all the things that you're going through as well as a fellow grinder, I think is also important. Or somebody who wants to become a grinder, kind of looking into the easiest way to go about that. Like, I think I was thinking about all the hotel rooms I've shared with more people than a hotel room should ever share. And I think I split a room with 9 people once. Wow. Yes. So when you try and start pinching pennies so that you can go to the next tournament the next weekend, because you have to pay for a hotel every weekend, you know, you do some desperate things, especially when you're a poor college kid like I am. So, you know, it's not always bad to share a hotel room with 9 people, but I wouldn't recommend it if you can do anything else. So, I don't know. I really loved this article by Emma. I hope she keeps kind of writing in this line of thinking, because she seems to always bring to the table things that other people don't write about as much. Especially about, like, self-reflection and lifestyle and Magic, which I think are really big, important things besides just playing the game.
Yeah, I agree. I really hope that Emma keeps writing articles and sort of shedding light on the grinder lifestyle, because there's a lot that people don't see. I mean, you know, playing Magic professionally is made to look like such a glamorous thing. And sometimes, in some regards, it is. I mean, when you win a tournament, it can feel very like you're on top of the world, but a lot of it is not glamorous. A lot of it is, you know, having to, you know, sell your cards to pay your entry fees, or, you know, there are a lot of things that she said in this article that I didn't know about, like that SCG writers get to play on the SCG tour for free. I didn't know that. Or that, you know, if you you can find ways to save on some of the associated costs. And sometimes, even if you have, you know, a friend who can get you deals on hotels or a friend who can lend you cards, sometimes you still can't afford it. And for me, I mean, I feel like I never truly went on a grind in the way that a lot of people do, because I live in Seattle, which well, you wouldn't think of as a geographically isolated place, but in a lot of respects it is, because, you know, now that the SCG tour is mostly on the East Coast or in the Midwest, I can't go to events every weekend. I can basically, if I wanted to, I could just go to PPTQs, which, you know, is another way to qualify for the Pro Tour or to, you know, achieve certain, you know, professional magic goals. I guess the closest thing to a grind that I went on was just going to PPTQs every weekend, and it was really lonely. And I guess because I went to a lot of magic tournaments by myself in my own city, I got a lot of the loneliness and isolation without the introspection. You know, it's not like I was in a car for 4 hours by myself and I was, you know, asking myself all these big questions about my life and what I wanted. I never really had the opportunity to do that because all I did was, you know, get on a bus and go, you know, half an hour away from me to another game store. So it was a lot of stress and a lot of, you know, high pressure without that release of, you know, sitting in a car or going back to a hotel room or anything like that and being alone in a strange city and, you know, thinking about things from a slightly different perspective. I never really had that. And I'm kind of a little bit jealous of, you know, the people who live on the East Coast or in the Midwest and can have that, because that's not something that's really available to me. But I do miss the grind in certain respects. I miss, you know, as much as I love teaching people how to play Magic, which has kind of been my role for the last 6 months or so, I really do miss the grind of it. And I really do miss, you know, challenging myself and playing against the best players in my area or, you know, the best players in the country on a regular basis. And fortunately, now that I have a new job, my schedule is different. I would like to get back to the grind again. I had spent a little bit of time helping a friend of mine prepare for the Pro Tour, and he was telling me that, you know, because I wasn't on the train at the time and because I couldn't go with him to Scotland and actually, or Ireland it was, I think, and, you know, help him prepare on site, he did feel really isolated, even though he had a really great experience at the Pro Tour. So I'm hoping that I can find a couple people to really, you know, bond with and test with regularly, because I feel like that's what I'd really need to get me back to things.
Wow, so many things. I can definitely understand that for sure, Hallie. I haven't been on the grind really for the last few months, and I really do miss it. And so reading Emma's article, I was picking out like little things that she would say that really just kind of resonated with me. She talks about sitting alone in a vehicle and being able to have your time for soul searching and deep thoughts and self-discovery. And I can definitely relate to that, even if it's just been me alone in a car or if I'm going somewhere with Aaron. We have very lengthy, elaborate discussions about many different things that I would not have maybe talked about if it wasn't the two of us in the car. And so that is definitely something that I miss and I want to do more often. It's just been kind of a little wonky financially, so I'm hoping that later this year I'll be able to participate in more events than I have recently. She also talks about the more you compete, the more you want to succeed, and I can definitely understand that. I have fluctuated with what I want to do with Magic for a long time now. And I get in these little spurts where I'm like, oh, maybe I could do that. Or no, I really don't want it that much. Or I kind of want to do it. I think overall, I want to be better. So I do want to compete more. But I don't know that I necessarily want to be just taking down a tournament. I think it's just a personal thing at this point. And so I appreciate that competing enough has kind of ingrained that in me now. So going through the grind has allowed me to assess what I want to do from a magical perspective, at least competitive wise. Losing has definitely been something that I've had to deal with, sometimes not the most graciously. But I've definitely felt good when I've been able to beat someone that I haven't been able to beat before. And you finally have that sensation of, I finally beat this person that's giving me a run for my money all the time. even someone at my local store, I have never beaten him and he hasn't played there in a while. And I just 2-0'd him. And I was like, yes. I was like, this is everything. And this was just this past weekend. So I'm like, yes, I'm getting better. I didn't used to beat this person. So I'm slowly noticing definitely some changes. And I think that that's a good thing from playing against people who are multiple different skill levels, especially she points out when you go to larger events, most of the people you're going to play against, they're not maybe competitive players. They're happy that the tour came through their town or there's a GP close to them and they just want to play. You know, they just want to be in a larger level event. So you kind of have this diversity that's there. So not everyone you're going to play against has memorized the metagame backwards and forwards. I accept variance. That is something I definitely do. But I do think it's good that she mentions that accepting the variance that comes with Magic while also learning not to use a crutch for one's ego tends to come with experience as a player. And I definitely think there are some people that I know personally that need to take this lesson to heart. And finally, she meant...
My ears are ringing.
And finally, she talks about sometimes just trying new things can change your life in a way that you never thought possible. And I can definitely agree with that in relation to playing competitively, even just playing at my local level and just trying to get into the judge program. These are all things that if I had never tried, I never would have known what the possibilities could be. And now I feel good where if I don't show up to FNM and I come in, people are like, where have you been? What's going on? Let me tell you all the scuttlebutt. And it's like, okay, girl, I just wasn't here for like half an hour and you missed me. Okay, cool. Or, you know, you get to go to events and network and meet people. And even with judging, like, I just feel like that's something I definitely want to give a lot of focus to, maybe more than playing. If I had passed my test, I definitely would have asked to judge at Vegas just to help with side events or just do something. And I don't even care if I just have to help like on a staff level. I just want to be more involved and do things from a different perspective at this point. So it's just amazing all the different things that being on the grind can teach you about yourself, about yourself as a player, and trying to decide what you want to do in Magic and trying to discover yourself. So I'm really happy that Emma wrote this article. I hope she writes more things like this because it definitely gave me more things to think about in relation to how I want to go about going through my life. And I'm really thankful that she did this.
The grind is definitely not for me. It's funny. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday, Chris. You know, you were talking about some of the weird long conversations that you and I have, and we were getting ice cream yesterday, and somehow we got on the subject of being in school and being forced to read books as like assignments. And yeah, you know, we were talking about sort of books we hated to read, and Chris, I think you mentioned A Farewell to Arms.
Awful.
And I had mentioned having to read the Iliad, and I was like, nope. I was like, I just don't like being told what to do. I don't like doing things because I have to do them. And I was like, I love reading, but like, you can't ask me to read, you can't make me read To Kill a Mockingbird because I'm just going to watch the movie and fall asleep during it and still fail the test. I just don't like being forced to read books. And I think that, you know, the way that I learned the grind wasn't for me is because I would have to do things I don't want to do. And I've been very open about this. You know, I made that mistake a lot when I first came back to the game. You know, I was playing decks that people told me to play. I was playing decks that I read about that they were good. I was playing an event simply because they were happening and because they were close by. And I was playing formats that, you know, happened to be popular, or maybe that happened to be whatever the flavor of PTQ was, and I was miserable. And so, you know, through the years, I've really learned that I need to do things because I want to do them. I've learned to say no to things. You know, my local game store will be like, you know, standard PPTQ, and we don't get very many events, but it's like, if I don't want to go, I'm not going to go because I know that I'm going to be miserable, I'm going to be a terrible sport, and that's just something I don't want to be anymore. And you know, the part of the grind is just doing things. You know, you see people that are like, I really don't want to play standard right now, but damn it, I need this pro point, or damn it, I need this whatever. And I just don't want that to be me. And I've tried to do that, and I was really, really unhappy when I did. And so I've gotten a lot better at saying, these are the events I want to be at. You know, I've also learned that I go for the peep
people. You know, some of the most fun I have at events is when Chris and I are laying in bed, our respective beds, staring up at the ceiling and talking about the dumbest things at 2 a.m. after we've come back from a GP. You know, it's just that those are the moments that really make events for me. You know, or the sweet houses that we get to stay at when we find Airbnbs. You know, that's more fun than the venue sometimes is, you know, look at this really dope house that we got and things like that. And so I've learned that I have to do things because I want to do them, and I have to do them with friends. I can't really go to events by myself because I don't have the support system there. And, you know, like Hallie said, it's really, really, it's even more lonely when you're completely by yourself. And, you know, I need Chris there. I need somebody there. And I just can't do it by myself. And so that was the one thing I really took away from Emma's post, is that the grind is just not for me. And I respect people who can do it, but just I really need to play decks I love to play. I need to play formats that I love to play. I need to have the freedom to, if it's the day of, be like, I don't want to do this, and I don't have to do it. Because I couldn't just make myself do some of these things. And, you know, I would really love to see some more, you know, while we're on the topic of peeling back the curtain, I would love to see some more articles about playtesting. Because I have been wanting to kind of step up my game in that regard. And I always wonder, like, how many hours a week do y'all spend doing this? And, you know, do you keep notes? Do you keep like percentages or spreadsheets of like how well your deck is doing? And like, I would really love to see some more perspective on how these people prepare for events, because even though I can't necessarily play in as many events, I know Vegas is coming up, and I really, really want to focus on some formats, but like, I don't know if I'm playtesting right, and I really just need somebody to be like, this is what you do. Like, this is how many matches you play. This is how many hours you sit there. and I'm more than happy to do that, but I really feel like my playtesting could stand to be improved. So if anybody's listening and you love to playtest, let me know what your process is, because I'm looking to get better at that. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
So I should be guesting tomorrow on, which is Tuesday, on T-Mox Zirconia and helping them brew. So as far as I know, that is still happening. So that episode should be out, I believe, this Friday when our episode drops. So I will keep you updated on that, but I'm looking forward to doing some sweet standard brews with some really awesome people again. So please stay tuned, and I hope that you will listen to the episode.
Your last appearance on their show was really good. I had never heard people brew a deck in like real time before. Like, that shit was live.
Yep. It was exciting. So I'm very hyped.
Yeah, it was very cool. And speaking of guest spots, I recently made an appearance on the Planeswalker Guide podcast with our friends AJ Bailey and Raul Morney. I had a really, really lovely time. We spent the whole episode talking about fair decks. I don't know why they invited me, but and we talked about, like, you know, unfair decks and interactivity and why we like these decks and sort of the stigma around them. And I talked a little bit about us and our show ending and Magic Mics and things like that. So definitely go ahead and check them out. On Twitter, I believe it's PLNS Walker Guide. That's the Planeswalker address. That's the Twitter address. And I was really proud of the appearance. So definitely check that out as well. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Instagram at HalCanSan. I've been actually updating my Instagram. Yay.
I noticed.
I cook a lot, and I needed a place to put all my pictures of food. So I've started using Instagram more, and it's really helpful because a lot of the time, I'll talk to Robert on Sundays, because that's usually the day we go grocery shopping, and I'll be like, so what do you want to have for dinner this week? And he's like, I don't know, what do you want? And so it helps, you know, we're feeling indecisive. It helps to have a visual guide of everything we've cooked in the last several months to look through and be like, okay, well, we can make this. Remember how good this looked? You remember how good this tasted? Let's make this. And, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm probably going to be posting more food pictures soon, and maybe pictures of other stuff. We'll see what happens.
I actually tried getting back into Instagram the other day, and I realized, and maybe it's just me, but the Instagram camera is really mean.
Like, I just cannot find a picture of myself that looks good. And people think I'm crazy when I say this, but not all cameras are created equal. Like, the camera that comes with your phone is not the same as the camera that, like, Snapchat lets you use, or, like, you know, Instagram lets you lose. And I don't know what it is, but the Instagram camera just always makes me look like the Wicked Witch of the West. I'm just, like, not, no angle, no filter. I'm just like, you're not very nice. And so I think if I do use Instagram again, I think it just needs to be for things, because every time I try to take a picture, I come out looking like Phyllis Diller, and it's just a bad scene.
I made Watson an Instagram.
I saw.
It hasn't really been updated in a while. Maybe I could add Wally to it. If you want to follow it, it's bearded_Watson. Like, one who has a beard. Or you can just follow me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MEANMUGGER. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. I am hoping to do a stream in the next couple weeks when my school schedule slows down. So look out for that.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is CryptoCommandWithKs. My Twitch channel is twitch.tv/tokriz. I also do tandem streaming, usually once a week, with Aaron from Turn One Thoughtseize. So that Twitch channel is twitch.tv/T1Thoughtseize. We've been having fun doing that, and so I hope that you will come and view me there, even if we're just talking about candy. But it's been a good time. And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I've been really slow about trying to get the next post out, but it's been very personal, and so it's just been kind of difficult to write. But I'm hoping to have it out this week, either by the time this episode airs or before. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I went to watch your stream the other night, and I thought I was watching a stream about magic, and somehow it turned into, like, smuggling Cadbury eggs in places, and I was like, what's going on here? I was like, this is not what I signed up for, but I can't look away. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com, twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. I stream Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I do have plans for an April Fool's stream.
Are you playing Burn? Is this what's happening? I'm ready.
I can neither confirm nor deny that Burn is happening. I will try to stream April Fool's Day and make it one for the book. So definitely come watch my stream. You can find the show on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us at thegirlfrombracket@gmail.com. Still a couple more weeks to get us in your questions before we go. And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.